if they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we now move to a new segment, and I want to thank you all for calling in and joining that last part of the segment to something that whoever guest just said, and I think it's true, you hear nowhere else in the dial but here on WEA 80.9 FM and the Mark Steiner Show with those kind of conversations that most radio would not allow on. We are joined here in studio by Bill Berry, who's retired director of labor studies at the Community College of Baltimore County. He's the author of Union Strategies for Hard Times and From First Contract to First Contract, a Union Organizer's Handbook. And his latest book, which you'll hear more about in the coming week as we talk to him about that, is the 1877 Railroad Strike in Baltimore. We're also joined by Carrietta Hires, longtime SEIU 1199 organizer at the Johns Hopkins Hospital. And she was present at the contract talks between the workers and the hospital. And welcome both. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Carrietta. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Let me start with you, Carrietta, and I, because you were there and Bill is here to give us a kind of a labor perspective on what this means in terms of labor struggles. But, Carrietta, talk about this. I mean, one of the things that I'm trying to figure out what happened in these contract talks, I know that the union members have to vote on this still, so it's not a done deal yet. And we know that from all of our coverage of this that such a high percentage of Hopkins workers live in poverty and live on poverty wages. But talk to us about what you think this potential contract agreement did.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting us back, Mark. The struggle's been long. We know we've been bargaining since March 4th. And what the game plan was to start up was to try to lift our members out of poverty. And when I say poverty, the lowest paid worker here at Hopkins comes in at $10.71 an hour, which is way below the poverty level for a family of four. And we also know that Hopkins is the leading employer in the state of Maryland, and then there's what we call the hub of Baltimore City. They're number one, you know, with medicine, so why not be number one in helping to lift not only your employees but the members of the community that you serve out of poverty? We had what we call a 15 by 15 campaign, which means that anybody working in Hopkins for 15 years of service or more years of service should be making at least $15 an hour. At least, and at the end of the day, Tuesday about like 2:30 in the morning, the final conclusion was that they finally embraced the concept of members should be making at least $15 an hour. Anyone working with 20 years or more service, as of April 1st, will be making $15 an hour. In the following year, anyone working with 15 years or more service will be making $14.50. an hour. It's a 4.5-year contract. The third year of the contract, anyone with 10 years or more service will be making $13.75 an hour. But the crucial point of this is that at the end of the contract in 2018, the lowest paid member on staff at Hopkins will be making $13 an hour. And anyone coming in will be making $12.60 an hour. That's well above what would then be the 10-10 minimum for the state of Maryland, and it actually gives folks actually lift up so they can at least be able to begin being employed with a livable wage. This sets the standard, we think, for the residents of Baltimore City, and it also allows Hopkins to be able to say, yeah, you know, we're helping to lead the way finally, you know, with our support staff.
So this is, and I think that there's been in this whole process, there was a lot of public pressure, and it was, you know, we've covered this pretty intensely, and nobody from Hopkins would talk to us during this, and they actually wrote to us. I'll try to find that email right now, where it said they could not come on today either until, and they would not want to talk until at least after the union workers actually vote. Bill Berry, I mean, you've been covering, involved with labor unions and labor, and been covering labor strikes and labor struggles for your whole life.
Since before you were born, Mark.
I don't know how much longer that could be, but you can't be that much older than me. but tell me, Bill, I mean, so talk about this in from that perspective.
Well, I think there are two parts. One is that the healthcare system is broken in this country. And when you have to talk about people who are skilled workers, and I think one of the things that is a disservice is to regard the women who work and principally in the unit here as unskilled. They are as important to a hospital success as a surgeon because they keep it clean, they keep the patients ordered. And I think $13 an hour in 3 or 4 years is still not nearly where we want to be. And I think that the reimbursement system, the private health insurance system, one of the things I talked about in the Union Strategies for Hard Times for public employees bargaining is healthcare is a killer. And I don't know if this contract includes additional co-pays for healthcare, but that's a hidden wage cut for almost every worker. And my previous employer at the community college is increasing health insurance for active workers by 5% a year. And it's just pushing everybody down. It's increasing the gap. The second thing, though, is that these workers really struggled hard. And they had a multi-front campaign and forced Hopkins to change. I think that it's going to have an impact on retail because all the stores that bring in people at minimum wage and slightly above, and I think it's embarrassing. State of Maryland can't get a higher minimum wage. Seattle, City of Seattle is $15.
Right, $15,
and,
right.
Even that is poverty. And I'm retired, and I'm getting more than that from my pensions. So it's a complicated problem, and you can't solve it just in one hospital. And I hope that the union spread this across the industry in Baltimore, and I hope they use it as an organizing model to go after the non-union hospitals and nursing homes.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that those were all really important points that Bill was just making. I'm just curious about the co-pays, just since you raised that. Is that in there, Carrietta?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought it up because we were actually able to keep the health care costs under control. We have protections against the increases. For the first year of the contract, the costs are frozen. For the second year and third year, no more than a 2.5 increase. And for the last year, no more than a 5% increase. And what's significant about this is in our current contract, it's at 10%. So we were actually able to get some good language on that. And another thing that we were actually able to get language on is that realizing that the market analysis actually changed for various other jobs, you know, in the hospital for members that we represent, is that we have a side letter, which we will hold their feet to the fire through our labor management committee meeting, is that they will go back and review all of the jobs. And if they are falling or fell below the current market analysis, we will be in talks about, you know, raising their levels of wages as well.
Yeah, I'll read very quickly what Hopkins did write to us, and then with some final thoughts from our guests. Kim Hopp from Hopkins wrote to us. Late last night, the bargaining committee agreed to recommend what is on the table for ratification. The vote will take place over the next couple of days. We are glad to have arrived at a resolution that works for all parties and look forward to continuing our focus on providing world-class patient care out of respect for the hard work of our Johns Hopkins colleagues and union representatives who have been at the negotiating table. We don't think it would be appropriate to comment further given that the vote hasn't yet been ratified. Thanks, Kim Hopp. So that was what Kim wrote to us when we asked for a Hopkins representative to join us here in this conversation. But I think it does kind of, you know, I mean, when you see this overall push, Bill Berry, here on the Supreme Court, the votes have just taken place, and around the country, Wisconsin, against public unions to kind of crush and quiet public unions. To me, that's why this SEIU struggle here in Baltimore has got some really national importance, given that battle going on around public unions, which are the kind of heartbeat of the union movement today.
Well, I think one difficulty strategically is that it's very, very dicey to strike a hospital. And the conventional wisdom, and you see it revived today, is, oh, we need to get back to the strike. Well, for public employees, and we were in California recently where the cable car operators were on strike.
Oh, right.
And in hospitals. And I think it's very – unions need to be more creative, and they need to figure out other pressures, and they need to look at structural changes. They need to look
at – What do you mean by structural changes?
The healthcare system in this country, where you have a healthcare system based on private insurance companies and minimal reimbursement through public agencies. It's going to get taken out on the workers and not this guy who's retiring with $14.5 million. I mean, you have the same class employment structure in a hospital as you do at General Motors. And so it's both bargaining with a single employer, but looking at an industry and looking at the whole way that the country is set up. And health care is crucial because it involves people who don't have it. It involves the control of the Affordable Health Care Act by the private companies and President Wall Street. And so you've got to look beyond these one negotiations because you can't negotiate anymore a contract with one employer in the healthcare industry.
And let me just very quickly ask you, Carrietta, when will the vote be taken and when will it be done?
Actually, the vote will take place this Thursday and Friday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on both days.
Now, I want to say that we have to take a break here, and I'm sorry we had to shorten this segment, but I'll tell you what we are going to do in the coming weeks. I'll be in and out a little bit for some family issues that I have to deal with, but I'll be back in the studio here. We'll have some great substitute hosts as well and some pre-records coming up. They're fresh new shows. But we will have Carrietta Hires and Bill Berry back, as well as some of our other union people, to talk about where unions are and look what happens after this vote. We've been trying to cover the union movement in our community extensively as we can in all kinds of conversations. And Carrietta Hires, I want to I saw that picket line, and I just want to say that many of us are just kind of blown away by the power of these workers and what they stood for, what they did, and what they were willing to do, and their care for the people in their care, I should say. And Carrietta Hires, I appreciate so much you joining us once again.
Thank you so much.
And Bill Berry, always great to have you in the studio here.
Likewise.
And we will see you next week. We'll be talking about his book, The 1877 Railroad Strike in Baltimore. That's coming up next with Bill Berry. Next week, that is. Stay with us. Thank you so much, everybody. We're going out here with a break with June Richmond, who was born on this day in 1915, Chicago, Illinois. Jazz singer widely regarded as the first African-American to regularly perform with an all-white band that was the Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra. We'll be right back. And when we return, we are going to remember the incredible June Jordan, so please stay with us.